It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah! Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here each and every day on Liberty News Radio. We're coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona, here in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. You know, we're going to go ahead and open up the phones. I know there's some people who want to come on. We'll do it. Here we go. 866-986-NEWS. And I hate when they do that, so I'll give you the number. 866-986-6397. 866-986-6397. Let's go ahead and go to John from Canada. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Ernest. Yeah, that was a very compelling interview you'd had with Rebecca. I would throw in my two cents, though, to suggest that they're not warring for the interests of the Afghanistan people. I mean, the last thing that the military bosses here want is reconciliation. Because, you know, if we just let all the egos get out of the way and just say, you know, as you actually referenced yourself, you said, you know, are we going to let them teach Afghanistan philosophy or are we going to give them our Western culture? And their philosophy on this war is that you're not following probable cause. You know, you're accusing bin Laden without any evidence. And the FBI today, you contact the FBI, go to their website, bin Laden's not connected to 9/11. You know why? Because they can't put his name on a warrant without evidence to form a conclusion. And
you know, I understand your point. Let's get back to Afghanistan, you know, because let me tell you what, I guarantee you, they aren't going to use all my tax money they ripped off from me to begin with to build this school and then some imam get in there and go death to America. I mean, that ain't going to happen. Okay.
Right. Well, the Canadian politicians like a year or so back went to Afghanistan to figure out what happened to our $10 billion, and it was lost right at the front door. The building that the money was issued to said that they couldn't account for, I think it was $10 billion. But, you know, we want to blame and I'm sure there's lots of corruption there. But the fact remains that the soldiers there do not war for a just cause by following, for example, they threatened and did put to death a man simply because he was a Christian in Afghanistan. The soldiers didn't speak a word for his defense. They've made it legal to rape child wives. Soldiers speak nothing for the interests of those children. In fact, I have a quote from a brigadier general or commander of the... I'll get it for you in a second. Oh, here it is. Brigadier General Colin, commander of the land force, has been advising soldiers that they do not interfere with incidents of forces having sex with children, quote unquote. You know, they're advocating the rape of children, and they're not defending those children's rights either. All you'd have to do is say, look, you're innocent until proven guilty. You need evidence to form a conclusion. That's the building block of a civilization. But the grunts can't war for that because they're cowards. They don't support the FBI's conclusion that bin Laden's got nothing to do with this terrorist event. And it's not that the FBI's anti-Bush or anti-Obama. They just don't. There's no evidence. This is the thing. You know, Bush, actually, his verbatim quote is, quote, we don't need any evidence.
Well,
we know
you expected,
quote. I mean,
you expected something different. You expected something different. What'd you expect?
Right. They're criminals who pirate our authority, similarly as the banks.
I can understand. You have an opportunity to bring up these things about
Afghanistan.
Afghanistan and Osama and Iraq and all of this. And there's a lot of people that haven't heard it. But I get to the point to where, you know, I don't care what your reasons are. You know, I don't care why you want to go over. I don't care. I don't care.
Not saying that either. I'm saying to just shoot people indiscriminately in your name is a crime against God and man. It's a crime against America to know that soldiers are ordered to kill these people who are called Taliban, who simply, the main accusation is manned evidence.
You're missing my point. My point is that I don't care if you had a really great, 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 great reason for, you know, shooting somebody if you're standing over there. My problem is you shouldn't have been standing over there to begin with.
That's what I'm saying, too. It costs you money. You have to pay for this nonsense. Why should you have to pay for these crimes? You shouldn't be paying for this. The perpetrators for 9/11 need to go to prison, and those in Afghanistan who advocate the murder of people simply because they're Christian or the raping of children need to be arrested. And then guess what? We save a ton of money because nobody's going to be firing at the American forces anymore. They're going to go, oh, yeah, they support Allah, where all people are treated equitably. Or Christ teaches also, you know, treat others as you would wish to be treated yourself.
Tell me what's going on.
And be incarcerated indefinitely without trial.
Tell me what's going on in Canada. I mean, you know, you're from Canada. You're talking about, you know, American policy and all this stuff. I mean, how does Canada see this? What are the people, how much money is going from Canada to Afghanistan? I mean,
total waste. But it's an alternative reality we live in here. There's for many reasons, and I don't want to take it. Well, I'd love to take up the time, and if you give it to me, it would be awesome. But, I mean, there's lots of reasons why we live in a different way here. We don't have communications like you guys do. For example, in this province of Manitoba, there's only one radio station that's allowed to have any political discourse. And these are criminals, vicious, evil enemies. They're not evil just because they say they're evil. I'm saying they're criminals who steal from our community and con soldiers to die needlessly anywhere.
Well, you mean allowed? Allowed? You mean you're not allowed to have competing radio station?
Right. Apparently, yeah. And it's the same right across Canada. So we can't even talk about anything serious because one newspaper and one radio station, and both of them get millions of dollars from the lotteries, for example. And the lotteries has a front page ad on the newspaper every single day of the week. It's like $50,000 a day. And these guys at the radio station, all they do is air casino commercials. So as a consequence, they won't tell people that there's criminal fraud transpiring there, and it's huge criminal fraud.
Okay, you know, let me go ahead and ask you some questions.
Sure.
Now, there are other ways of communicating. I would imagine there might be like an underground little pamphlet, newspapers, flyers, internet. I mean, you know, what's the internet access there?
Oh, it's superb. It's about the same as you, I guess. We don't get it as well as China or Japan or anywhere else, really, where apparently they get like a standard 20 megabits per second or whatever.
So
it is.
Are you having meetups in Canada? Is there, you know, political dissent manifesting itself in some way?
You know, I hate to tell you, my friend, but not really. You know, we have these protests similar to the, you know, I don't know what your position is on the teabag movement or the teabaggers or whatever you call those guys. It's not defined by anything. So, you know, we've had protests against the war, protests against the IMF or the G20 where people go out. But, you know, there's no strategy here to defeat these criminals like with the G20 and IMF. They're advocating the destruction of our social programs while not defending the victims who have lost trillions of dollars through these banking frauds by Paulson. If they truly represented your interest, they demand that the return of those monies. Instead, they're doing that. Plus, they're saying give Social Security to themselves. Now, I don't know, your position on Social Security is probably you don't necessarily like it. But anyway, why do we want to deprive elderly people what they've formerly put into for themselves? This isn't tax money. This is money that they've already paid into. Now, we're going to deny them those payments because the IMF doesn't want to help pursue Paulson. And I'm sure you're aware of Paulson. He bailed out AIG, which in turn gave fraudulent payments back to Goldman Sachs, which he was the head of. He sold AAA mortgage securities that were nothing of the sort. They were subprime.
If you listen to the show for, I don't know, a couple of days.
Yeah, I know you're a great guy. I've talked to you before, and we've had good discussions.
You know that we're on this, but I'm telling you, it's a much more basic, fundamental issue, and I'm sensing that you're having the same, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, let's say I'll ask you some questions and use you as an example here. You suffer from the same sickness Rebecca does.
In which way?
You know,
I don't want to be robbed.
Well, you know, if we're going to have these senior citizens that paid into this program, or we have these social programs that they want to do away with while they're still funding their, you know, bankster buddies that, you know, screwed us, you know, we should take that money instead of giving it to them. We should, you know, redistribute it to people that really needed it and were promised it and, you know, and blah, 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 blah. You know, that's the same thing she was saying.
Well, it's their right to have that money not be mismanaged as it is. Like it's managed in a trust fund, and fiduciary responsibility is to earn as much money as you can on that deposit. Guess what? You get less than 2% on your $1 trillion deposit.
Okay, all right. Let me go ahead. No, time out. Let's go ahead and, you know, walk this through. The way the system worked is that, okay, we're going to put a gun to your head. We're going to force you to have retirement because we can. We want to create a bucket of money. All right, we got this bucket of money. We'll get the bucket of money later. We'll get the bucket of money right before the baby boomers start to retire, like now, okay? Yeah. And then they'll go, everybody's chips all in, y'all in, everybody's chips on the table, okay, they're ours now, all right? So that was already predetermined to begin with. So the thing is I'm going, all right, you know, so what are they obligated to get? Well, their money back or a certain dollar amount, okay, we'll just print up the printing presses, crank them up, and here you go, we're done. You know, you want to put in another $5 trillion in to the system, you know, Bernanke's warming up his helicopter, so he's going to go dumping it out. Oh, fine, let's give him the senior citizens and get him out of Social Security. But my point is that, you know, what you're advocating is that, well, we have an obligation to them, so my grandchildren that are just being born just now are obligated to do it. When does it stop?
Well, when criminality is halted by justice for ourselves. Justice is what we need.
Justice.
That guy's got to go to jail.
We'll talk about, well, thanks for calling in. You know, I appreciate the call. Maybe I'll talk about a little bit about justice when we come back. We'll find out what that is.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Sorrow. Yeah, it's always bad news. Yeah, I see trouble all my days. You know, I'm with the positive waves here, you know, but sometimes I just, you know, wow. I can't get some people to see how they're just like advocating the very thing that they're against. You know, John from Canada, he seems like a smart guy. He's got, you know, access to information. He's got it going on, you know. And let's talk about Social Security. And just in, you know, my lifetime. I mean, you start working, how old was I? You know, I turned 16. My 16th birthday, they had a McDonald's under construction. I'm riding my bicycle, my friends, we pull in, I stop and, you know, fill out the application, talk to the manager, and then I got to know him, you know, later on as I was doing restaurant management and everything, met him before and became friends, and I'm going, hey, you know, you know, word up. And it was, I learned a lot at the McDonald's. They had a good training program, and you went through, regardless of what you think of, you know, how bad the food sucks. But, you know, it was a very good training environment. And my 16th birthday, you know, I go in, I get my first check. Who the heck is FICA? You know, why am I giving them so much money? What up with that? And you hear your parents always say, yeah, you think you know. You don't know until you, well, how much you make, Dad? Well, I don't know, before or after taxes. Well, I don't know, there's a big difference. I mean, there's like a big giant spread there. You know, I mean, okay, so you pay a little taxes. No, you pay a lot of taxes. Well, what he thought a lot back then, man, that was, man, we used to dream of the days you only paid that much. So you start to realize, I remember the impact it had on me. And so my children, I have four. Two boys, two girls, 2024. Okay, you hear about my kids. And I grow up, I want to be just like them. Smart, productive kids, got it going on. But you can't really have the impact until, you know, they get good manufacturing jobs. They're working at Honeywell. They're learning to be machinists. They're still going to school. They went out, you know, did as temporary, you know, I don't know what they're part-time or whatever. It was like a temporary service. You work for that for a year, and then if they liked you, they hired you. If they didn't, they didn't. So my kids, you know, worked in family restaurant, good work skills and work ethic and so on. And they, like, hey, wow, these guys in a year, they learned all the machines and, you know, make twice the quota. And all these other guys are, you know, struggling to make, you know, whatever. And they're sitting around smoking cigarettes and, you know, surfing internet porn or something, whatever. You know, you got these young kids coming to actually work. And the guy's like, hey, you know, slow down, man. And, you know, and my kids were trained. You got time to lead. You got time to clean. But, Dad, there's nothing to do. I don't know. I got baseboards need scrubbing. I mean, you know, it was just that kind of work ethic. That's what my father did to me. So then I, you know, of course they're going to do well. Of course they're competing with what? I mean, even they went to private school. We lived very modestly to be able to make that happen and had a lot of different programs we were in, and we helped and worked and did whatever to be able to get them out of the government schools. But, you know, their friends are driving around in their Hummer that their grandpa gave them. You know, their BMW that was 2 years old, but it was a hand-me-down from their mom. I mean, you know, I know these kids. They're nice kids. We got to know them. Some of them are still friends. But what happens is, you know, I could see that they weren't going to survive, certainly not as things get the way they are now. So I go to my kids. I go, look, man, you know, in the real world, how do you think, you know, so-and-so, little Johnny over here is going to fare? Huh? What do you think is going to happen there? You know, what happens when, you know, mom and dad loses everything in the coming apocalypse, you know, which has happened. These people are moving. People that I really enjoyed. We went to 6 years. Each kid went to that school. So I was probably 10 years we were there, more than that. And these families are starting to consolidate. I mean, they, you know, bigger homes, you know, three generations living together, you know, and there's a lot of benefits in that. But you really don't understand just how much you're impacted until you see how much government takes and then what you get in return for it. It's always the promise. You know, there's always the promise. There's always the promise. I mean, that's how you they get to be justified being in existence to begin with, what they promise. There was a TED Talk. I don't know if you guys ever see that. You go to TEDTalks.com, I think it is. And I'm not even sure what TED stands for. Maybe it stands for TED. But they have these seminars that they go around the country, and you'll have all these, you know, really cool speakers. And they usually only speak for, you know, 6 to 15 minutes or something like that. It's not very long. And they'll, you know, do something cool, you know, something innovative, some science, some new technology, some perspective from another country, some, you know, philosophical thing, some whatever it is. And they're usually kind of a progressive-oriented kind of thing, you know, and they try to stay away from politics, but you know, obviously you can see what their thing is a lot of times. But you know, I remember this one guy, and he had a graph, and he goes, you start, you know, make an L shape, you know, in front of you, and you got the bottom left hand corner. That's where you start. Okay, you're down to the point down there. Well, you know, the first thing they do after revolutions, after discontent, after, you know, financial apocalypses, you know, after Great Depressions, you know, that kind of thing, you know, they'll come in, you know, we got a new plan. We got a new plan. We're going to redistribute the wealth differently. We're not going to spend it on, you know, this bad, evil stuff over here, because you're right, they were bad. They're doing it wrong. We'll do it right. You know, give us the authority to, you know, take your money and redistribute it, and we'll do a good job at it. You know, let us do it. You know, and we got all these promises, we made all these people and all these things that they advocated, and all these senior citizens and everything are sitting there beating the drum, you know, how they're going to enslave my unborn grandchildren. You know, I get it. So they make you a promise. They go, you know what? For the most people, we're going to have this democracy thing. We're going to vote on our computer here, but you know, it's, you know, it'll be a vote. You'll get to go through the cattle chute and it'll feel good. So we go with this and we're going to make a promise. Okay. You have a promise. And then you have the reality. Now, let's say you draw a promise, a 45-degree angle, goes straight up your graph. You know, this is the promise. They keep increasing the promise. We have a progression of promise. Then you have reality starts to diverge from that, and it goes more flat. As time passes, the gap between what is promised and what is delivered gets wider and wider. It gets to a point to where it becomes exceedingly clear that they're never going to fulfill the promise. Promises. Any part of the part, even portion, even resemblance of a promise. You know, what's the main promise? You know, consent of the governed, life, liberty, property, pursuit of happiness, you know, stability, you know, peace, tranquility, truth, justice, American way. I mean, whatever the promise is. How far does it have to get from what the promise is to what the reality is before you go, no. And so what happens when you go, you know, the problem is these guys that are promising you stuff that are taking it. And you always got a better reason. No. We would do it better. No, we owe these other people. No, we got to do it. You know, no, we got to promise that we're going to keep. And you know what? And we're going to use a gun to make sure the little grandbabies have to fulfill it. And they're the good guys. Not. So when you got this distance between reality and the promise, you go, you know, how many, how many more months, weeks, days, years, decades? I mean, are we going here before we start to go, you know, the vast, overwhelming majority of the people are like, you know, no legitimacy anymore. There's no credibility. There's no integrity in government. There's no, I care not what thee says. I'm pretty close to the grindstone on electoral politics. I've been involved every year. I found out that today is the last day. I thought it was Tuesday, and it's today. I got, I don't know what time is it. I got like an hour and a half. You know, I go run down and file paperwork, go online, push a button. I'm going to, you know, run for office. That's the deadline's today. And I just can't muster up enough give a crap to do it. I've been doing it every single election. I run for Congress, run for U.S. Senate, run for Secretary of State, run for County Recorder, run for State Legislator, run. I'm still going to have, we'll have a lot of signs up. We'll have a lot of fun. You know, we'll do a lot of activism. I got friends that are running. You know, we'll do whatever. But I just, I'm like, you know, I'm not going to give them the pleasure of my participation. Because the reality is so far from the promise. It's time for Loveolution.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Well, a lot of times the only way I can reach you is make you smile just a little bit. You know, because you can't have all the gloom and the doom. It's just too much pain. And I wouldn't be able to do this 5 hours a day. You know, it's therapy for me. Maybe it is for you just a little teeny-weeny bit. Because, you know, we're talking about, you know, hey, we got to have justice. I mean, you hear a lot of guys saying that. We got to have justice. And I'm for what? For just us? I mean, how about me? You know, that was the whole promise. You know, that was part of, you look on your little L graph here, you know, you got, you know, the left, you know, vertical line and the right horizontal, you got a little corner down there and you got the 45 degree angle going up and they promised, you know, justice. Peace, prosperity, you know, American way, you know, truth, life, liberty, property, pursuit of happiness, whatever. And you start off, I mean, your first act. Muzzle forehead, give me money. You already lost. Next. So, you know, as time goes on, I get more and more anarchist as time goes by because I can't rationalize a consistent philosophy and be in the archive for like ever. Imagine this. You know, how many of you have thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of hours on the radio over past almost decade, okay? You know, every word that's ever come out of my mouth on the microphone, on my own show, on other shows, on television, on CNN, on all that stuff is archived on the internet. We got it somewhere, okay? There it is. Do you think that my grandchildren, great-grandchildren, they come back, you know, I want them to come back and go, oh, he was just a shield for the man. You know, he was inconsistent. He was all over the place. I mean, there may be a progression and evolution and, you know, getting a little harder in what I'm willing to put up with, you know, but there's a consistency there. I do seek justice. I do seek prosperity. I do seek peace. Of course I want to have, you know, truth. You know, of course I want to have, you know, right to my life and liberty and my property and pursue happiness. And I only know one way to do that. Is to advocate for everybody else doing it. I mean, you know, if I don't do that, then I'm, you know, not only do I not deserve it, I don't see how I'm going to get it. I can't be a justice-oriented kind of peaceful guy if I'm advocating, you know, put a gun to your head to go, you know, spend in some noble cause that I got. You know, I got a bunch of noble causes. I got a bunch of that. I mean, I even talked to, you know, freedom advocates and liberty lovers and fighters and revolutionaries and everything, and it comes down to, oh, if we only had the money. I had $1 million, and tell you what I would do. Yeah, what would you do? And a lot of times, you know, they would, you know, use the government to do this. You know, we would teach this in the schools. We would. You're just going down the same path. You know, I would. I don't even need that much money to advocate for just leaving everybody alone. How about that? You know, what are you going to get? Just a culture of people that understand that it's bad to steal from people in the name of filling all your great promises that you make. Because all these promises have to come with funding. We are going to fill in the blank, and to do that, oh yeah, we need to have right to your property. You're already the bad guy, and you ain't got started yet. And this seems like I'm being unreasonable. Seriously? Well, let's look. I mean, this is what's going on now. 1.65 million properties received foreclosure filings in the first half of 2010. This is going to get, you know, it's just starting the next wave. And they have what they call a bunch of shadow inventory that's sitting out there that they're not talking about either. Those who think manufacturing, this is Ms. Shedlock, those who think manufacturing is going to lead the way to sustainable recovery need to think again. Data suggests durable goods sales are about to collapse. You know, we've been talking about the Baltic Dry Index, you know, shipping of goods and raw materials around the world. Everything's slowing down. Everything's going down. You know, so he goes on in the details about Mortgage Bankers Association releasing weekly mortgage application surveys, and they're way down, and this is going, you know, blah, 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 blah. The economy is going down further than it already is. So, you know, what else are we going to do? You know, there's so many things that are being done. We don't even, and America stands on the precipice of a total collapse. This is from Prison Planet, all right? Joseph Watson and Alex Jones. There can be little doubt that America, along with the West as a whole, is being set up for a total collapse in which life as we know it will fundamentally be altered and rebuilt around a collectivist model managed and controlled by the same criminals who engineered the crisis in the first place. Yeah, probably. Why? Because they can. And why can they? Because people are believing the promise. Well, you know, this time, and if we don't bail it out more, well, this will happen. You know, fear and death and destruction. You know, we got Bernanke out there getting ready to, you know, he's powering up the helicopters. You know, we're going to go dump some cash on America again. You know, we had that up, I think, yesterday. You know, what'd you think was going to happen? I talked to some friends that, you know, are, you know, in the markets, and some are wealthy, and they got their own opinion. And I even have a lot of guys on the radio that are economists and so on. And the debate is deflation versus inflation. Well, deflation is, you know, everybody stops doing everything. Prices start dropping. Real estate goes down. You know, you have the commodities, you know, start going down because there isn't manufacturing, yada, 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 yada. Then you have the other side saying, no, there's going to be massive inflation. And inflation is the monetary supply, and it starts to reflect in prices. So, you know, which way do you go? How to, you know, who to believe? What? And I kind of have to lean towards the inflation guys, because they're basing their predictions on the fact that government will never stop the increase in spending. They will always increase spending. So here we have, we talked about this before, the definition of quantitative easing. I keep hearing this term before. I'm going, quantitative, what the heck does that even mean? It's just more gobbledygook, you know, words that they're using to confuse me. So, of course, all right, fine, you know, we'll go ahead and put it in here. We'll see what's up. Yeah, let me put that in there. We go quantitative easing. And you take and you put that in. Let me go ahead and do that. Copy. Go into here. Paste. And wiki. And what do they say? Quantitative easing. The term quantitative easing describes a form of monetary policy used to increase the supply of money, blah, blah, blah. And they go, it's a term that they use because they usually try to increase the money supply by lowering the interest rate. Well, when you're at zero, then what do? You know, they all of a sudden the central bank starts purchasing financial assets, including government paper and corporate bonds. And it says in other financial institutions using money it has created ex nihilo. I got to go to Latin now. You know, I got, you know, yeah, you start throwing Latin at me. You know what it means? Out of nothing. They're just creating money out of nothing for quantitative easing. So what does that mean? They're just printing money. Whether this be, and this is from ZeroHedge.com, whether this will be another $2.5 trillion like last time, which was the price of an 18-month delay of the inevitable, or a $5 trillion concerted global effort, as Ambrose Evans Pritchard believes, is irrelevant. The only option the central printers, pardon, bankers, have left is to flood the market with yet more worthless paper. Keep an eye out for the doubling in the price of gold and in the second quarter, and is publicly announced when it's publicly announced that they're doing this, which will also double as the ordinary for all fiat paper. What does that say? See, publicly announced, which will also double as the obituary. I'm sorry, obituary for all fiat paper. So when they start saying, this $2.5 trillion, you know what? We're just going to, $5 trillion. We need a whole bunch more. Boom, and they dump it in there. Well, yeah, it's an obituary for fiat paper, for paper money. It's you know, gold and silver is going to get stupid, and they're going to keep trying to manipulate it down. They're going to do, and we had all of a sudden there's all kinds of gold transfers going on and so on, and going to the central and the Bank of International Settlements. And I'm like, how the heck did that get in there? It's only a couple of years ago I even heard about them. Start doing a little research, you find out the central banks have a central bank. You know, you see the central banks are the funnel where all the money's going to, or all the profits, all the interest payments, the money they just created, and then they got their own little central bank. It's called Bank International Settlements, and they start taking gold as collateral for leveraging it up to, you know, lend you all a bunch of money, and then when you can't pay it back, oh, I'm sorry, we got to keep the gold then. And we just printed money? Man, I want that job. You know, I'm like, woo, that's a way to make some money. You just print it and then buy gold with it.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, IA, here in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, where we got, you know, a lot of guys are out there, you know, doing a lot of work. They're making up signs, they're getting all kinds of ornery. You know, we just, you know, cause how do you express yourself? What do? You go, write your congressman? Is that it? Is that what you do? How's that work out? Well, here we go. I want to finish up on this, and we'll dwell on it a little bit. ZeroHedge.com always has a lot of good stuff that Jack Gregson, our economic columnist, he posts a lot of things from around the internet he finds of interest. And he's talking about the gentleman Grant, the Iron Grant, who doesn't matter. In an interview with Bloomberg TV, Grant says that the first order of business tomorrow, when the Fed's new additions officially join their new groupthink perpetuating employer, will be, I guess they're getting new guys at the, you know, Fed level, voting on whatever, to try once more to print enough dollars to make something happen in the U.S. economy. Okay? That's what's going to happen. The ever-sarcastic Grant managed to completely skewer Janet Yellen. Now, Janet Yellen, what is she? She's San Francisco Fed president. Okay? So she's, you know, that's who she is. So she's with the Fed. Steve Diamond and Sarah Bloom Raskin to ridicule the Fed's 100% track record of not only focusing on the wrong thing time after time, but getting the response consistently wrong with 100% precision, and also manages to make fun of the Fed's credentialed Wall Street Journal lackeys, who, courtesy of the Fed's editorial control over the reporting process, get a direct line into leakable Fed strategy. Grant's thoughts on the new Fed's additions, I think the first order of business will be to try once more to print enough dollars to make something happen in the U.S. economy. Blah, 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 and it goes on. 36 times, 36 for 36, this San Francisco Fed President Janet Yellen has voted in favor of, you know, more. How's that working out? So you think they're gonna replace her? You know, those the guys that voted 35-1. Hey, gotta get rid of him. You know, this is they're just gonna keep doing this. You know, it's quantitative easing. What does that mean? Printing more money. Now they got all kinds of little, you know, funky ways that they bring it into the economy, and of course, you know, the big bad boys get it first. You know, that's a whole nother show. But it's just, you know, how much can you pump it in? Well, it's like it's on purpose. You know, it's going to be, what does he put, which will also double as the obituary for all fiat paper. And that means that, you know, gold and silver is going to skyrocket. You hear a lot about gold. I prefer silver simply because I think it's got further to go. And they don't see it as money. They see it as an industrial metal. And there was a, you know, we need to do this story. I got to remind myself. There was, during the Manhattan Project, when they were building the first nuclear bomb, they had a big, giant need for silver. You know, because they had these big, like, big giant magnets that would help in the processing, blah, blah, blah. They had big giant, you know, stockpiles of silver. Well, as time went on, you know, they printed the money out of it. It went in the industry. They started, as a commodity, they started selling it short. You know, they started, you know, shadow inventory. They started manipulating. They started, you know, all of a sudden, they're going, is that stuff even still there? How much we got now? Well, it's been able to kind of, you know, play a game with it, and all of a sudden everybody starts taking inventory, taking delivery of all their commodity contracts, and you start going, I had it here a minute ago, and I think we're going to be in for a big giant woohoo on the silver thing. So, you know, I'm just kind of, I lean towards silver. But, you know, gold, you know, it's going to show its day too. So I, you know, you got silver? Do you? All right, you better get some. Because I can see there is a term that I just really started to use a lot in my own head. Because, and we've talked about a little bit on the show, and I talk about, you know, prevailing opinion. As if prevailing opinion is real. You know, prevailing opinion prevails because of what? I don't know. We allow it to. Earth is flat because the New York Times said so. I mean, you know, based on what? Now, what's the evidence that you use? So-and-so's guilty because CNN said. You know, so-and-so's not guilty because Fox News said. That doesn't mean anything to me. I hope you're growing out of that. I know a lot of people aren't. And a friend of mine, he calls it consensus reality. He's saying that, you know, just because everybody consented to the information, you know, they consented, that is reality because everybody says it was. Consensus reality, prevailing opinion. You know, and if we can change that, if you can have an impact during election cycles, are a good time to do it. That's why we focus a lot of our attention during election cycles, and we'll go out and put up signs and stuff, have freeway overpasses, and they'll be kind of stencily and non, you know, recycled banner material or the back of some, you know, Pepsi logo, diet leg, somebody short, whatever the heck it is, and it's blank on the other side. Or we could even use some of the printed area and kind of have some fun with it in different colors and do different things. I mean, creative because we can. Well, what do you put up there? One of the signs that we did a lot of, and it just said the Fed did it. And we put the Fed did it. It's kind of a poster orientation, like a rectangle, you know, vertically. And it says the Fed did it, and it had a dollar sign, the dollar mark, with an arrow pointed down. The Fed did it. It made the money go down. And we were doing a video one time, YouTube, that we're doing, promoting some other stuff that we're doing, making signs. And there's a woman, her name's Renee Houlihan. She's one of the activists here. And she used to have her own every day during the week. She had a 5-minute program on a local program. She would tape these little 5-minute spots, and she'd get whatever the idea, she'd get done 5 minutes, boom. And it would play between these two popular shows. And it was, you know, I don't know what they call it, 5 minutes with Renee or something, you know, and she just slapped them around. I mean, it was. She did a good job on that. That was fun. And then she just got busy doing other stuff. But I was asking her as she's making signs, and the reason we were doing the video is one time I came home, and in the backyard, my wife had a bunch of the girls over, and there's probably, I don't know, at least 5, 6, 7 girls there making signs. And I go, you got to get this video, you know? You know, it's all the women. Oh, the good-looking women are out here making signs. Yeah, we got going on here in Arizona. So I'm doing the video, and one of the signs that they were making was the Fed did it. And I pointed at Renee, and I said, the Fed did it. Did what? And she goes, they printed paper money and bought gold with it. Wow. Wow. I was like, it never occurred to me it could be that simple. Heck, that could be a sign. The Fed did it. I know we should do that. Well, the Fed did it. And have, you know, dot, dot, dot. You go, did what? They printed paper money and bought gold with it. You know, we should do that. Hey, guys. Come here, come here, come here, come here. I got another sign for y'all. Yeah, this is how it happens. You know, we had the signs that say the Fed did it. You know that one, the dollar sign with the arrow that points down? You know, one time last year I asked Renee, and I go, the Fed did what? You know, and she goes like this. She goes, they printed paper money and bought gold with it. You know, so that, you know, I if we put that out, and we just put the Fed did it, did what? Printed money and bought gold with it. You know, see, yeah, that's a good one. What do you think? Think we can get that one in there?
Yeah.
Well, go see if you can find that, you know, that one stencil that we have for that, because then we can just incorporate it in there, and it just put, you know, did what? Printed money and bought gold with it.
Okay.
Because just the last couple of days, they did, all of a sudden, the Bank International Settlements is giving all these I don't know what the heck they call them, you know, some kind of credits, you know, these units of whatever you get more money, zeros in your bank account, okay? But somebody's doing big transfers of gold. So gold's coming in. I bet you what they're doing is they're taking all this gold bullion and they're going, all right, we're using it as collateral. So we'll give you like, you know, 20-to-1 leverage or something on it, right? We'll give you, you know, twice, 3, 4, 10, 20 times what the gold's worth. We'll just have this as collateral, you know, for the pinky swear that you're going to pay us. Well, they know they're never going to pay them back. So what happens? They're going to get to keep the gold. And what did they give in exchange for it? They just push little buttons on a computer.
Yeah. Zeros.
So yeah, I think this is going to come. So I, you know, can we get that, you know, kind of incorporated in one of your things that you guys are doing? I bet you it's in the, you know, over on the wall over there, all those signs. Yeah, it's the Fed did it, and, you know, and then just kind of dot dot dot. You know, did what? Printed money and bought gold with it. You know, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, can you guys work that up for me?
Yeah, man.
Okay. See, you know, that's how it's done, man. You know, that's how it works. You know, these guys, and they got their own good ideas. Joe, he has. Oh yeah, go ahead and tell us about the sign that you guys are working on. Are you finished cutting that out?
Yeah, we just finished.
Okay, go ahead and turn the microphone to you. Tell the people what it is.
We just finished a 4x8 foot sign. It's a, like a sticker off libertystickers.com. It says, "A fence, a border strong enough to keep them out is strong enough to keep you in." And it
has like barbed wire on it, and it looks like a chain link, you know, kind of thing. And they got it. It's a really cool looking sign. And, you know, kind of, I know a lot of the audience, you know, they're going, no, I got to have it. I want a fence. And I'm going, yeah, they called it the Berlin Wall. I remember that.
Yeah, the East Berlin government told everybody it was to keep those jealous capitalists from invading because it was a better life in the East. That's what they told them.
But anybody who wants to talk about a fence, who's going to pay for it?
Yeah.
We're just going to get, you know, all those illegals, we're going to put them down in tents and make them build it out of adobe. That's what, you know, I mean, hey, you know, I've heard it all, man. Well, you know, that's how we have fun here. We express ourselves. It keeps us sane. How are you keeping yourself sane? I don't know. You need to think of a way because things are going to go start getting strange days indeed. Yep. That's what's going to happen. And I just want you to survive it. And a lot of surviving, if you survive it crazy, you know, if you come out the other end and just whack, or you know, yay. You know, so we're trying to maintain our sanity. And the best way to do that is advocate for the freedom of us all. That's the only way that we're going to maintain it, is by advocating it for everybody. Because we're selfish. We'll be right back.